This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Mining to Survive is an independent zine that documents the day-to-day lives and struggles of women and men living in poor mining communities in Bolivia. The project began as a youth-driven journalism project in the Southern Cone of South America 2 years ago. In February, the zine was published in conjunction with an exhibit of photographs at Blake's Bistro in Vancouver. Don Paley and Frederick Dubois were the producers behind the exhibition and the zine. Don is a journalist, activist, and photographer from Ruskin, British Columbia, and she's currently based in Berlin, where we've reached her this morning. Hi, Don.
Hi there.
How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Now, all of the photos included in the zine were taken at the end of 2004. Can you tell us about the nature of your trip to Bolivia?
Yeah, the time we spent in Bolivia was 2 months. It was from the beginning of November until the end of December, and it was 2 months within a project that was 6 months long between September 2004 and February 2005. And during the 6 months, we spent time in Argentina, Chile, and Uruguay documenting various kinds of issues like political struggles, like really a diverse array of topics, workers' unions in Chile. And in Bolivia, we concentrated on mining.
What kind of approach did you take to getting to know the people in mining communities and documenting their stories?
What we did was actually the first major city that we went to in Bolivia is Potosí, and that's somewhere that, as a tourist, the main attraction is to go into Cerro Rico, which is a very well-known mountain that has been totally mined on the inside and that it's still being mined, to go in there as a tourist and take a tour. So we started by actually going as tourists into this mine that's still being used and that has been active for more than 400 years, and took a tour and said, okay, we want to keep working on this. And we then made connections with NGOs who we'd also contacted before when we were in Canada, one in particular called CEPROMIN, the Center for Promotion of Miners. And through CEPROMIN, we got contacts for various organizations because miners are organized often into cooperatives. And we then traveled to mining communities in Bolivia, including places like Siglo Vente, and also gold mining communities like in Yungas, which is north of La Paz. So we took a really grassroots approach. We tried to make our contact initially with the workers, just going into mines. After we'd had our first exposure, we felt more comfortable just going into around mines and speaking with workers, and they were more than happy to talk to us about their situation.
Can you describe what images people would have seen if they were, say, here in Vancouver last month at the exhibit at Blake's Bistro, and the same photographs that you see in the zine?
The images are from a few different communities, tin mining communities and gold mining communities, and they document basically the kind of people that we would just talk to in the places where we visited. So workers. We did go inside a number of mines, so there's a couple shots inside the mines. There's portraits. There's also, we didn't always pick what I felt were the most aesthetically pleasing photos, but also photos, for example, showing tin miners pushing a cart by hand because it shows actually how people are working. Photos showing women and men working in the river, because another part of the project, after we realized that the mining doesn't just happen in the mines in Bolivia. It also happens all around the outskirts of the mining area. So you have people, they call them bayanquieras, working in the rivers, panning for gold, any kind of gold that was missed when they filtered it. When they filter the gold from the rock, the men that withdraw it from the mines, because women aren't allowed to enter into mines, some of it escapes and goes into the river. So people that are using this as an extraction method, and also women who are, it's mostly all women, working outside and basically hitting rocks together looking for any pieces of tin. So we tried to document how the work actually looks and who the people are that are working.
I think one of the things that sort of really comes across when you look at the photographs is how hard these people are working.
It's really something that blew us away. I mean, hand pushing the carts, going into a mine wearing shorts and a hard helmet and carrying a backpack, working with a chisel. It's amazing. People work very, very long shifts, usually 6 or 7 day work week. Especially the male miners who work inside the mine, they just chew coca leaves the whole time. They don't eat. It's amazing, actually, the amount of effort that goes into what results in the extraction of very little mineral.
The zine is actually called Mining to Survive. What conditions do people involved in mining typically face in terms of their work life, aside from the very, very hard work?
Yeah, it varies a lot. Basically, mining was nationalized in Bolivia between the years of 1952 and 1985. Before 1952, you basically had exploitation controlled up until independence of Bolivia, controlled by the Spanish, and later controlled by a few business owners. And they were basically working in slave conditions. From 1952 until 1985, the working conditions were regularized, they had safety standards, and so on. Since 1985, it's been privatized, and what that means is basically miners have been abandoned. So they've self-organized often into cooperatives, but what we see is an exploitation of mines that isn't necessarily organized. They don't have engineers, so there's a large risk of caving in. People working extremely long hours, not having any kind of job security. At one point, there is one mine that's still unionized in Bolivia with the old union called Comibol. And he made a comment about how one of the miners we were talking to, we did a tour of the mine, and he made a comment about how miners do technically have pensions, but very rarely live long enough to get to use them. So it's also very dangerous working conditions. And then the conditions are even more precarious for the people that are working outside of the mine. So exposed to the elements, again, no job security whatsoever, and very, very long work days. And also in the photos, there's two photos of children working. And it was kind of an awkward situation because they had in this community where the photos were taken, it's called Chukini, and it's a gold mining community, and they had a number of NGOs through the community, and the NGOs were always focused on child labor and making this a very, very problematic thing. What we learned just by approaching the people, talking to them as independent journalists and not as representing an NGO, is that the children, basically, they only work in the river when they have a day off from school, and they do it so that they can get their school supplies and so on. But you also see entire families working together, so it's something that is very, very labor-intensive, and it's very, very difficult conditions of work. But as people say, I have a profile. There's a profile in the zine of a woman we talked to named Alicia Solis Mendez, and she actually says, we'll keep working as long as we can, as long as God allows, because as long as we're working, there will be food. So people, if they can, they're able-bodied, they'll be working.
One of the pictures that you have of two women, there's two women sorting mineral in the slags. I believe one of those is Alicia Solis Mendez. What's her story?
We were doing a tour again. We had been led around by a woman, I believe, I also have a photo of her in the exhibit, named Nora Esqueza, and she took us around and showed us the working conditions. And there was actually, she was working, I think it was on a Sunday, so there wasn't too many people there working, and we just approached her and said, what is your normal working day like? Every single day, 10 hours a day, she's got, I don't know how many children, 7 children. Her mother started working outside the mine when her father went on strike protesting against poor working conditions, and one of her daughters is also working as a pailliri, they call it. The English translation would be a hand picker, basically going through the scraps looking for any bit of tin that may be left from the earlier exploitation. But the hope that was unanimous among miners and people working in the mining communities, older people, was that their children get an education and then they do something else. And in some places that is possible, like, for example, in Siglo Vente, which is a tin mining community, they have their own university. But in Potosí, I know for her, she had the hope that her her children would be able to get out of the mining industry. Three of them do study at the university, but the other ones have ended up working in the mining industry, which is a very, very precarious kind of workforce. But that's the hope. That's what drives people.
Yeah, no, we know that Bolivia has elected a new leader in Evo Morales, who's a cocoa grower from the Aymara ancestry and actually the first indigenous president of Bolivia. Does that lend hope that this situation will improve?
I think definitely. Not to overestimate or overcredit, but I do think that ordinary Bolivians, that Evo Morales resonates with them. And it's really too early to say, but I think that Evo Morales can certainly understand their situation better than previous presidents of Bolivia who've been from the elite, the Bolivian elite, who probably have never worked in a mine or been to a coca plantation in their lives. And there is a lot of, I mean, coca is a ritualized part of mining. Miners are always chewing coca. It's you'll have the coca seller standing where miners congregate in the morning, doing a brisk business, selling bags of coca to the miners. And you also have a lot of miners who will go to the Chapare region and start farming if the mining isn't working out, or the flux going the other way, so people leaving the coca plantations and going to the mines. And Evo Morales definitely has currency with coca growers, and I think it goes for miners as well.
When I was looking at the photographs in the zine, I was kind of struck by not just the kind of documentation of people's work, but also by the kind of sense of humanity and pride in their work that came through. What's your hopes for, say, someone in Vancouver who reads the zine about a situation that is so far away?
I think the idea behind this photo exhibit was to show everyday life, to show something that isn't often seen and that certainly isn't sensational. I mean, there's no, they do use dynamite in the mines, but there's no burning, there's no outright war. But there is a kind of violence that is very, very intense. And our goal, Frédéric and myself, in publishing this zine, is that I don't think the photos can speak by themselves. There's so much history, there's so much context that goes with them. And we just wanted Vancouverites that might have picked up the zine or seen the photo exhibit to be able to get more than just a quick look, but actually to go in and see what the living conditions are like and just to maybe better understand what is happening in Bolivia for the average person working in the mining industry, which is a large amount of people.
Don, how did your idea of your role as an independent journalist coming from outside Bolivia evolve through this project?
Oh, that's a very difficult question. I think that my idea of who I am as an independent journalist is still in evolution, and it's not something certainly that was fixed for me when I arrived in South America. I had worked also in South Africa before as a journalist, but it was just an identity that was still forming. But basically, I tried to keep in my head that the people I was accountable to were the people that I was talking to, the people, the workers, the people organizing to have a better standard of living. Those were the people I was accountable to, and that's what was so exciting about the project, was that we weren't bound by having to meet the requirements of a particular editor who wanted to read about the success of an American company in Bolivia. No, we had the right to be totally independent and really try to show something that wouldn't necessarily be considered a story or a scoop, just to show the daily life of workers. It was really an exciting experience.
Well, it's been great talking to you this morning.
Thank you very much for having me. And unfortunately, we don't have the photos up anymore, but people can check our website because we have the zine up on there as a PDF, and the website is patagoniabolivia.net.
Great. Take care.
Thank you, Lorraine.
I've been speaking with Dawn Paley. She's an independent journalist who produced the zine Mining to Survive with Frederick Dubois. Their zine is available at patagoniabolivia.net, and the website's also a source of independent news and reporting in the region. And, of course, you can go to Red Eye's website if you want to have a direct link to their site.